the 2019 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series season certainly got off to an interesting start this year at Daytona. You had a lot of crashes. You had some interesting exchanges between Michael McDowell and Joey Logano. A big win for Denny Hamlin, his second Daytona 500, and hopefully a good DFS day for all of you out there, because guys like Kyle Busch, Eric Jones, and McDowell all coming through despite starting towards the back. So hopefully a fruitful day of all of you, and now looking forward to Atlanta and what will be the start of a new era for NASCAR. Let's break all that down here on the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast powered by NumberFire. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, here to break down the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500 from a NASCAR DFS perspective. That is at Atlanta Motor Speedway, and as mentioned, it is a start of a new era for the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series, because they are running a new aero package. We'll discuss what exactly that means in just 1 second in our track breakdown. We'll go tier by tier to let you know which drivers are interesting for this week for DFS as well. If you're listening to this on Wednesday, though, quick reminder, our PGA podcast is up, previewing the WGC Mexico. If you want to play some PGA DFS, head over to the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed and check it out on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app, and get a taste of what Brandon Gadula and I are doing for this weekend in PGA DFS. For this weekend in Atlanta, the first practice will be at 11:35 Eastern on Friday morning. Qualifying will be that night at 5:10, and then final practice is at noon on Saturday. And as always, we talked about last year, I try to stress watching practice when you can, because the broadcasters have insights that we don't get from the stat sheet, and you can kind of just see what the general sentiment is around the garage, but which cars are fastest in practice, and they can also tell you for this new package what they're seeing on the track and what it could mean from a DFS perspective. So try to watch those practices at 11:35 on Friday and at noon on Saturday to see what takeaways you could potentially get from what goes down on the track. Lock for the event is at 2 p.m. on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern time, so some time Sunday morning if you want to do your lineups then to fill them out and kind of optimize them for what we could see during the race on Sunday. Before we get into our track breakdown for Atlanta, if you want to get in on the action for DFS, head on over to FanDuel.com and check out their Intimidator contest for this weekend. It is just $5.55 to enter, and once you do, you've got a shot at a top prize of $15,000. The top three places all earn at least $5,000, and there is a total of $75,000 in prizes to be had. To check out that and other contests, head to FanDuel.com and check out the NASCAR lobby for this weekend. FanDuel.com and the NASCAR lobby to check out all the offerings for Atlanta. All right, let's take a look at what we need to know for this track breakdown at Atlanta. And again, everything is going to revolve around this new rules package. For those of you who may not be NASCAR fans and don't know what exactly I'm talking about, NASCAR is changing things up this year with the intent of trying to get closer racing and just better competition each race on these larger tracks, and Atlanta does qualify. They're running smaller tapered spacers in some races this year, and we'll have aero ducts added. And for this week, they're not doing the full package. The aero ducts will not be in place. It'll be just the smaller tapered spacer. So not the full package, but it will still change things quite a bit. The effect of those smaller tapered spacers is that it reduces the horsepower that these finely engineered engines can generate. That means that drivers will be able to hold down the throttle longer in the corner than they could before, which should in theory, you know, keep things a little bit closer and potentially lead to tighter packs and closer racings and increase the passing that they get. That would, in theory, have a pretty big effect on DFS. And we did see this work in the Xfinity Series in some races over the past couple of years, led to some drafting that may not be in place in Atlanta because the air ducts are not going to be the way they will be at other tracks, but they don't really need it because Atlanta is already a track where passing is pretty possible for sure. We also saw a version of this package in the All-Star race last year in the Cup Series, in that one. They had 11 lead changes in 93 laps. No driver led more than 25 laps consecutively. And the year before that, there were only 3 lead changes in 70 laps. So it did make the racing better, and it prevented any one driver from really dominating that specific race. So if we were to see a similar outcome for this weekend in Atlanta, it would change a couple of things for DFS. It would spread out the laps led a bit and reduce the odds that one driver does dominate the entire race, which would have a big impact. It would lower the appeal in drivers starting towards the front. So that's one implication. The second is that it would make it easier for cars starting in the back to make their way forward, getting place differential points. There are two reasons for that. The first is that the field would be tighter together, which means that you're not running out trying to run down the guy in front of you for 15 or so laps. Instead, they should be right there, meaning you could, if your car is good enough, get by them right away. I think another thing that this aero package is trying to do is make it easier to pass people once you do catch up to them, reduce the effects of the of aero and dirty air. So there are two reasons it would increase passing, and I think that that would in theory push us towards targeting drivers starting closer to the back as we do in Daytona and Talladega. But the problem with that is that there are a lot of laps to be led in Atlanta. There are 325 total laps scheduled for this race, which means there are 32.5 points available for laps led on FanDuel. That is a pretty significant number, and one we do not ignore. It has also played a major role in past Atlanta races. If we look at the past 4 races here, one driver has led at least 116 laps each time. It was Kevin Harvick every time. But, you know, like, just in general, a driver has led at least 116 laps in each of the past 4 Atlanta races. 2 drivers led at least 50 laps in 3 of those 4 races, meaning that there were 2 drivers who got a significant bump from laps led. The one exception in there was in a race where Kevin Harvick led 292 of 325 laps. So it was just because one guy dominated as opposed to spreading the wealth a bit between 2 drivers. Basically, drivers in the past at Atlanta have gotten big upside via laps led, and that did matter from a DFS perspective. This new aero package could spread things out a bit, but with 325 total laps available, I think it's still something I want to emphasize here. Even at Daytona, we could get a bump from laps led, and we could get high scores from drivers starting at the front, so I don't think this will go away. And I think that you do still want to target drivers you think can lead laps, whether it be one driver or 2 drivers in a specific lineup. The other potential effect here would be making it easier to emphasize, easier to find place differential points. But at Atlanta, that was already in place before this new package came about. Over the past 4 races here, 11 drivers have scored 80 or more FanDuel points. 4 of them started in the top 10. All 4, again, were Harvick. All 4 of them led 100 laps. But the other 7 drivers atop the 80-point barrier all started 16th or lower. 5 of those 11 drivers started 29th or lower. So if you have a fast car in Atlanta, even in the old package, you could make passes. In theory, this should be even easier now with the reduced horsepower, you know, potentially keeping these packs closer together and making passing easier. So I think that what this says to us, you know, if we're looking forward to the 2019 version in Atlanta, is if qualifying gives you quality cars in the back, you want to take advantage and plug them in. They have monster upside, and it should be even more true for this format. They could pass before, and it should be even more true now. So we want to take advantage if qualifying does give us opportunities to get fast cars in the back of the pack. But you also don't necessarily need the guy to be starting 29th in order to have big upside through place differential points. We saw Jimmy Johnson win from 19th place in 2016. Dale Earnhardt Jr. finished 2nd in that same race after starting 16th. So you can get upside from pretty much anywhere as long as the car is really fast. And what this means for us this weekend is that we have flexibility for this race based on what qualifying gives us. If there are fast cars that qualify poorly, we're going to want to take advantage. But if we don't get that, then we can gobble up some laps led and look for drivers in the middle of the pack who will be able to work their way forward. So you kind of can just give or take whatever qualifying gives you. If you get place differential points, take them. If not, don't force it. That's basically the way I would phrase that. If we're looking at value plays, you've got flexibility there too. If you look back at drivers who have scored well in Atlanta without leading laps, which is basically what we're looking for out of value plays, they've started anywhere between 11th and 30th, actually between 6th and 30th, honestly, just not at the front. You know, you're not going to get a high upside day from a driver starting in the top five if they don't lead a lot of laps. So if you're looking for a value play, try to find drivers who will finish better than they're starting, but you don't have to, you know, target 11th to 20th. You don't have to target 21st to 30th. You have flexibility to just kind of take, again, what qualifying gives you. And to me, this is the perfect kind of race that I love, where I'm not set into one specific strategy. If we're talking about punting, I think that the new package would, in theory, make punting more viable. I just want to be careful with making that assumption before we see how things play out. Punt drivers, you know, low salary drivers have not traditionally performed well in Atlanta. They've had limited upside, low ceilings, which means you'd be banking on a dramatic difference under this new package. And that very well could happen. I think that that's okay to do that lineup, do that, make that assumption in some lineups. But I also think that when I look at the specific salaries for this weekend on FanDuel, you don't need to punt much in order to still get drivers who have a good ceiling. So there's good value out there. I think I'd rather go with that value, guys who are around $5,000, and then going to the true punt, because it really does limit the upside if you use a driver who is incapable of getting you a top 10 finish. So I think that that's kind of the thoughts from a roster construction perspective. I want to get one or two lap leaders each lineup, and try to take advantage of the number of points available for laps led, and then take place differential where you can get it, whether it be a fast car or just a mid-tier car. If someone qualifies poorly and has the potential to get a top 10, you want them on a lot of your rosters, and I think that you can punt if it gives you extra upside elsewhere, but if it doesn't, then I would be trying to spend up a little bit more and try to find that upside. What I want to see in practice, and we talked about watching practice before, and the how critical that is for this specific weekend, is I want to see the effects of the new package. I want to see, is drafting a factor in Atlanta? Because that was a factor in Las Vegas when they were testing back in January, but they were also running the modified air ducts, which they will not have here in Las Vegas. So I want to see, you know, what drivers do in practice there. I want to see which drivers made gains over the offseason, because a lot of teams and a lot of drivers can make big changes. The entire Ford camp changed over to the Mustang for this season, and that could have a big implication. You know, they could struggle out of the gate. They did not in Daytona, but Daytona is radically different than what we have here in Atlanta. So track drivers pretty closely in practice, put a lot of weight in what you see in practice early in the season, and be willing to change your thoughts on a driver quickly, because teams and drivers do improve between Homestead in November and when we get to Atlanta here in February. This is the first non-restricted place race of the season, so put a lot of weight in practice, try to see which drivers are popping up, which drivers may be exceeding what they did last year, and if you have reason to believe that could be legitimate, I would buy in aggressively and try to be ahead of the pack before they can adjust the way they're viewing certain drivers and certain teams. With that wrapped up, let's take a look at our tier-by-tier breakdown of the drivers for Atlanta. Starting off with the elite drivers, that is Kevin Harvick at $14,000, Kyle Busch at $13,500, Joey Logano is $13,200, Brad Keselowski is $13,000 flat, and then Martin Truex Jr. is $12,500. And I think when you're looking at this tier, it starts and ends with Harvick, because he is the clear front-runner entering the weekend. If we look at the past five races at Atlanta, Harvick has led at least 100 laps in every single one of them. In total, in this five-race sample, Kevin Harvick has led 55.8% of the laps, more than half of them, which is just disgusting. He's had a top four average running position in all five of those races, and sure, it's translated to just one win, but that's likely due to some bad luck. He has been fully dominant at this track for half a decade now. So until we get practice data and see how it shakes out there, I'm going to enter this weekend assuming that Kevin Harvick is the clear favorite to win this weekend in Atlanta because he's been just filthy here. Now, Harvick is an older driver. I believe it's his age 42 season. We generally see drivers start to decline around their age 40 season. That has not happened with Harvick yet because he was, you know, one of the best drivers in the sport last year, arguably the best driver. So keep an eye on that from an age perspective with the new Mustang, with the new aero package. But Harvick at Atlanta has been kind of a cheat code the past couple of years. Looking outside of Harvick in this tier, I might have Joey Logano second on this list ahead of Kyle Busch, even though Logano is the cheaper guy between the two. Logano finished eighth or better in all four playoff races at 1.5 mile tracks, and that will be a key portion of our analysis for this weekend is how drivers did at 1.5 mile tracks last year, and Logano was very good. That does include a win in Homestead to get his first career Cup Series championship. So Logano down the stretch, really good at 1.5 mile tracks. Busch wasn't bad. He did finish second in Kansas during the playoffs, but he led only 22 laps over the final five races at these 1.5 mile tracks last year. Logano led at least 46 in each of the final four. So I have Logano over Kyle Busch prior to practice for this weekend. Brad Keselowski, also good down the stretch last year. He finished first or second each of the past two Atlanta races, did win in Las Vegas last year, but I think that he's below Logano because Logano was so good down the stretch and a bit better than Keselowski. So I think if we're looking at this tier, I would rank Harvick first, followed by Logano, and then Busch and Keselowski as a 3A and 3B. I would put Truex fifth, but as mentioned before, things change over the offseason. We have to be very comfortable with adjusting our thoughts on drivers based on what we see in the early couple of races and what we see in practice. So for right now, it's Harvick, Logano, Busch, Keselowski, Truex. But if things say something else in practice, I'll be very willing to change my mind on those drivers. Moving down to the second tier, that is Chase Elliott at 12.2 through Ryan Blaney at $10,500. And this tier does include the Daytona 500 winner, Denny Hamlin. But Hamlin wasn't that great at 1.5 mile tracks last year. He had only four top 10s in 11 races. One of those top 10s was in Atlanta, but he finished 12th or worse each of the final five races at this track type. That could very well improve because the new aero package does seem to suit the strengths that Hamlin has. He has run well in the Xfinity Series in similar cars over the past couple of years, but I think for Hamlin, I need to see it in practice before I fully dive in. If he is, like, you know, just unreal fast in practice this weekend, then I'm going to buy in because, again, I will put a lot of stock in what practice says, but probably going to be a little bit skeptical from the get-go for Denny Hamlin coming off of that win in Daytona. Chase Elliott, going back to this same tier here, he also had just four top tens at 1.5 mile tracks last year, so the same as Hamlin, but one of them was also Atlanta. But the difference with Elliott is that he got a lot better as the season went along. He won in Kansas, he was sixth in Texas, seventh in Homestead over the final three races at these tracks. So I think in this tier, Elliott is my top option by a pretty wide margin over Hamlin. I think he's kind of on the same level for me as Truex, even though Truex is $300 more. So Chase Elliott, I think, could have a big year this year, and I would not be shocked if he picked up where he left off last year at 1.5 mile tracks. On the lower end of this tier, I really do like Ryan Blaney at 10.5. I know, shocker, seems like I talk up Blaney every week, but the reason I like him is because he's volatile, and volatility is good in NASCAR as long as you sometimes get the top end of that. And Blaney did last year. He ranked fifth in the Cup Series with five top fives at 1.5 mile tracks last year. That's the same number as Keselowski and one more than Logano. And those are his two teammates. Blaney was runner-up in two of the final five races at these 1.5 mile tracks. He led 40 laps in Texas, finished second there. So he can definitely get you a win at a low salary. So I love Blaney. I think I likely have him between or above Hamlin, especially when you give him at a major discount at 10.5, whereas Hamlin is $12,000. So to me, Once I account for the salaries in this tier, I rank them Elliott first, Blaney second, and then Hamlin third, and then the other guys trailing behind them in this second tier pricing. Moving down to the mid-range on FanDuel, Eric Almirola is $10,000, and we got Alex Bowman rounding things out at $8,300. And Almirola was very consistent at 1.5 mile tracks last year, but he didn't show a ton of upside. He finished with 5 straight top 10s, but did not have a single top 5. So I think he's just kind of this really steady driver. So I'm just not sure he has the upside to lead a ton of laps at these tracks yet. So I think that with Almirola, I will love him if he starts poorly and can get place differential points. He is a really good driver and can finish well. He can get you a top 10 finish pretty much whenever. I would just need to see a lot of speed in practice to trust him as being one of my lap leaders for this race. Erik Jones, $8,800. I think if we're looking for guys who have a chance to win, Jones, to me at least, is more likely to do so than Almirola. He finished the season super strong. He was fourth in both Kansas and Texas, 1.5 mile tracks. He has raced in cars similar to this new package before, both in the Xfinity Series and in the Truck Series, and Jones has had a lot of success at both those levels. In 2017 in the Xfinity Series, he had 3 wins in just 18 races. So a guy who has done well in similar packages in the past. I think that Jones, as a result of this package change, has the upside for a really strong year. I'm not actively targeting him for laps led, but I do think he is capable of that at just $8,800. And at that salary, you can accept him just getting really good finishing points. So Erik Jones, probably going to start towards the front. But even with that happening, I'm probably not going to cross him off my list because he can finish well and he is a driver capable of leading laps at these tracks for a pretty low salary. In the same tier, one driver I want to single out is one where we need to be skeptical of the track history is Kurt Busch, because if you look at Atlanta numbers, he's going to pop. He has 3 career wins here. I believe he has 4 straight top 10s, but he's moving to lesser equipment this year with Chip Ganassi Racing. Kyle Larson's his teammate, and Larson has been good in Atlanta. He's been good at 1.5 mile tracks, even last year, but he's also one of the most talented drivers in the sport. And you don't want to assume that Kurt Busch will be good just because Kyle Larson has been good, because Larson, again, is just really good. So my general line of thinking here is that Kurt Busch will be in for a down year relative to the consistency he showed last year when he was with Stewart Haas Racing. He could prove me wrong, but his salary is still $9,600. That is pretty high, and I think I'm going to be off of him until Busch, whether it be in practice or in a race, gives me a reason to view him differently than I am entering the season. Let's move down to the value tier. This is Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at $7,600 through Chris Buescher at $6,000, and both Stenhouse and Austin Dillon, who is also in this tier at $7,300, showed improvement down the stretch last year at these tracks. Starting with Dillon, $7,300, he finished 11th or 10th in all 4 playoff races at 1.5 mile tracks. Stenhouse was fastest in final practice in Texas, the second last race of the year at a 1.5 mile track. He finished 11th in that race. So both these guys, interesting down the stretch at these tracks last year, both have been decent enough in Atlanta in the past, and they're both drivers who have done well on restrictor play tracks in the past. And this is not, like, I don't think that Atlanta is going to magically morph into a situation where guys who do well at Daytona will do well here too, but it can't hurt for guys like Stenhouse and Dillon, who know how to get around in that fashion and could potentially be positioned well with this new package for 2019. So both those guys I'm monitoring at the beginning of the year. Daniel Suarez is $6,800 and could be another potential value in great equipment because he's moving to Stewart Haas Racing, which seems to be a hair above Joe Gibbs Racing, which is where Suarez was last year. It does depend on how well the Fords transition to the Mustang, but I think in general, Stewart Haas was the preferred team over Gibbs last year. That's not to knock Gibbs. They were a very good team, but it did seem overall as if the SHR cars had a slight edge over the JGR cars. Suarez last year in good equipment had just 1 top 10 at a 1.5 mile track, but he is a former Xfinity Series champion, still decently young. So I think that he's similar to Stenhouse and Dillon, where he's worth monitoring, but you don't want to get too overzealous with him just yet. William Byron, final guy I want to discuss in this tier, is $7,000. This would be the track where you'd start to see the full effect of having Chad Knaus as his crew chief. We saw Byron have a bunch of speed in Daytona, 8th place average running position there, so it looked good. We've also seen the Hendrick cars do well in Daytona the past couple of years, and then disappoint after that. Byron also has a lot of ground to make up from where he was last year if he wants to be a regularly viable DFS, you know, asset in 2019. So I think with Byron, I want to see it before I buy in. Last year was disappointing enough where I'm hesitant to get overexcited just because he is getting a 7-time champion in his crew chief in Chad Knaus. But if he shows speed again, I think then I'll start to change my mind. Just not going to assume that's going to happen with William Byron. So in this tier, highest on Stenhouse and Dylan, monitoring Suarez and Byron for sure, because those guys all young and could be taking some steps forward for this year. Moving down to the punting tier. Now, in general, I mentioned that I don't want to actively punt, but I think that could change if Daniel Hemric is fast in practice or starts somewhere towards the back again, because he's just $5,000. I think that is a major bargain for a guy who is this talented and has competent equipment. He led more laps than any Xfinity Series regular on 1.5-mile tracks last year. He had 8 top 10s, 5 top 5s, no wins for Hemric, and he's never won in the Truck Series or in the Xfinity Series, but he ran out front and he finished well. That should translate well into the Cup Series for this year, because again, the Cup Series cars could be more similar to the Xfinity Series we've seen in years past with these rules package changes. Hemric, I wouldn't be shocked if he starts off well this year, if there is a lot of overlap between the new package and what we had in the Xfinity Series in the past. So to me, Hemric is a major bargain at $5,000. The one scenario in which I would not use Hemric is if he qualifies really well and doesn't show a lot of speed in practice. Like if he starts top five, but is, you know, roughly 15th in practice, that's a situation where I'm probably going to avoid him and look towards drivers starting closer to the back. But if Hemric starts 20th and is top 15 in practice, he's a pretty good value play. So keep an eye on Hemric. I think that I'm most likely going to be winding up using him this week because he's so cheap. And then I think that his salary will likely be much higher for next week because I would expect him to get quite a bit of talk throughout this week heading into practice. The other guy to mention down here is Matt DiBenedetto. He almost won at Daytona, and that could be a fluke. We've seen him do well at restrictor plates in the track. Other drivers with underfunded teams have done the same and then struggled later on, but I don't want to assume it's a fluke. He has a team alliance with Joe Gibbs Racing. That is the same situation that Martin Truex Jr. had last year. Now, Levine Family Racing, the team that DiBenedetto is with, was terrible last year, so I'm not assuming Daytona was legit, but I'm also not going to fully dismiss it. And we've seen some similar interest in DiBenedetto on the betting market because the Las Vegas Superbook has him at 60-1 to win this week. That is crazy short for everyone else in this salary tier. Looking at other win odds down here, Hemric is 100-1. Nobody else who is below $6,000 is shorter than 200. And again, DiBenedetto is 60-1. I would not bet him at that number. I would not consider betting him at that number, but it does show you that he is a potential value play at $5,000, and we should not fully dismiss what he did in Daytona. So keep an eye on DiBenedetto and Hemric in practice and see what they can do, because I think that they are two names to monitor in this punting tier for this weekend and would make me very much more receptive to punting if they grade out well in practice. Let's finish up here with our picks to win for the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. One driver above $10,000, one driver below it on FanDuel, and I'm going to exclude Kevin Harvick. He's 4-1 to win. That's way too chalky, way too easy, not enough fun. So excluding Harvick, I think my fun pick is Chase Elliott. He, again, showed a lot of improvement, 1.5-mile tracks last year, got the win, couple of other top seven finishes in the final three races, and he's a young driver who seemed to pick up a lot of confidence after he won in Watkins Glen. So Chase Elliott's my pick in the top end. On the bottom end, I like Erik Jones. I pick Erik Jones a lot down here, but Three top five finishes last year at 1.5 mile tracks, led 64 laps in Texas. He is very young, very talented, and has experience in similar packages in the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, and has done really well with those packages in the past. So Erik Jones, my cheap pick to win. If you want to get really fun, want to get really wacky, we'll go Daniel Hemric as another name to shout out there for a cheaper play who could have some potential upside to win this weekend. That is all we have for the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. Again, critical, critical, critical that you watch practice this weekend if you can on Friday and Saturday. Try to hear what the broadcasters are saying. Try to see who shows improvement from where they were last year. Just take in as much information as you can. If you can't watch it, try to find some write-ups on practice if you can, because there's going to be a lot of information that we get in both practice and the race this week, and we want to try to absorb as much of that as possible and be willing to change our impressions of drivers and the way we want to attack this race based on the ability to pass and how likely it seems to be that one driver will be able to dominate the race. So try to get as much information as you can this week and be willing to change your mind on drivers and your roster construction. As always, our NASCAR podcast back to Wednesday this week, and going forward, as we get you set each week, breaking down our strategies for the race and a tier-by-tier breakdown of the drivers. PGA podcast every Tuesday as well. To get all those as they go up, subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. We are just over a month away from MLB as well, so make sure you check all that out and give us a rating and review as well on all of those platforms. If you have any questions for me, I am on Twitter at Jim Sonnes, J-I-M-S-A-N-N-E-S. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, P-O-D-S as in podcast. Do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck with your lineups for Atlanta this weekend. Hopefully this new package generates the excitement they are hoping for. We can get a good race once again on Sunday. We'll talk to you all next week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.